June 29th, 2008. It's a Watt from Pedro show. Thank you. Watt from Pedro show. June 29, 2008, Sunday here at the Love Grotto on Pleasure Point. You know, some people have been writing me messages, Brother Matt, asking where is the Pleasure Point. They cannot find it.
Yeah.
Trying to find the...
It's stealth.
The Watt from Pedro show is going.
Stealth mode.
Yeah. So.
Secret location.
Incognito. It's somewhere west of the Rocky Mountains, north of the equator. I can tell you that much.
All roads lead to Pedro.
But we tell you anymore, yeah. Sit on your face. We started the show off with John Coltrane's Giant Steps, but alternate version number two from the Outtakes. Atlantic version. We have some guests joining us, Brother Matt.
Welcome.
Talia, you brought... some amigas.
See, I brought my friend Alyssa. She's like a sister. And Kendall and Brenna.
Welcome aboard.
Hey.
Been to Pedro before?
Just with Alyssa.
That counts.
Jack.
Just with me.
That counts.
So once?
Yeah, once.
You've been here once before?
Mm-hmm.
You're from Orange County?
Yeah.
It's okay.
Oh, hi, yeah.
That's the other side.
Yep.
Friends Ranch. You used to always stop there for boxes of oranges.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, it's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, I like what? Oh, man.
This still got the hot springs. Are they open still? Or?
Yeah, they're open.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wheeler Hot Springs and Matilaha, both are...
Yeah, the Matilaha ones are closer. And they're
sorry about those are cooler, yeah.
I should say the other song we play, I listened to Boris with the statement, but from the Japanese version of the album. I went and saw them. I got home last week, I think Sunday, and then Tuesday I went down there because the tour started... The motorcycles.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing like yesterday.
Yesterday was nuts. For 2 hours.
Yesterday?
For 2 hours it rumbled like that.
Yeah, there was bikes.
It's a good time to be out of town. Yeah, SWAT team chased them all out to the freeway like ranchers. Yeah, there were thousands. There were thousands of bikers yesterday.
You gotta come to Pedro.
If you're a biker.
Yeah, no. But put the trash in the can.
Yeah.
And a filter on the muffler.
Anyway, Tuesday, I drove down to San Diego to see him at the Casbah because when they play in L.A., I'll be overseas with the Stooges. So I hadn't been to the Casbah in a while, and that's my favorite place to play. But the last 5-6 times I played in San Diego area has been like Ocean Beach and Adams Avenue Street Fair and some amphitheater at San Diego State. Smashing Pumpkins or something. So it was good to see the boss, Tim Mays, there again. Because I wonder what he's thinking, you know?
Yeah.
Because
you're
not my band. Yeah.
Like
I'm giving him a brush. So I wanted to make it right. And it was a really good gig. They were wild.
Cool.
And they're on a U.S. tour now. So if they're in your parts, people out there listening, go see them because they're one of a kind band. And they've got that Michio cap playing with them too, so they're a four piece. One thing though, Smoke Machine and the chemicals were burning my eyes. About halfway through, I had to just seal them shut, and so it was audio gig, you know? I did an interview with the drummer, I think it's October 22nd, 2007 show, if you look back in the archive, here at TWFPS.com. Past shows and interesting conversation, but really good album, much different than the U.S. one. It's trippy. I think they had two different cats mixing.
Wow.
So anyway, I came back. I did four gigs with the Stooges in I think 17 days, so I had a lot of days off. And we got to ride on a helicopter again.
Oh, the Isle of Wight, Pile of shite.
Yeah. So now I've been on a helicopter 3 times. You ever been on one?
Once when I was a little girl in Fort Sakal.
Remember it?
Yeah, I do.
I went on that one.
It was pretty exciting.
Yeah. Done a few Catalina trips.
Too. Yeah.
Crashed just before I
left. Yeah, last week, 2 weeks ago.
Oh.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago.
Some girl shark hassled her in her yak, too. She fell out. Yeah, on the backside, like a Cat Harbor. And somebody got her yak. She swam in. She didn't get hurt or nothing.
Oh,
but she saw the thing. And it had big teeth in it. Big teeth marks.
Yeah, I mean, they look like probably seals to them or sea lions.
I want to paint the bottom of mine like an old bomber jet. Put the faces on them. Put a little face on the bottom of the yak for the
shark. Their eyesight's so bad. Probably just a paddle in the water, making like a sea lion.
Yeah, they go on the vibes.
So between the pile of shit, the Isle of Wight, and the first gig, which was in Belgium, Werchter, Flemish, looked like Werchter, but. He actually stayed in Leuven, which is an old university town. There was a plaque commemorating them being the first Western Europeans to accept Copernicus's idea. Uh-huh. The sun was in the middle.
Trailblazers.
So, yeah. They said there's still like 10% of U.S. people think the sun, the Earth orbits, or the sun orbits the Earth. Is that right?
But people still believe that now?
There's 10 for 1 out of 10 or something.
That's some crazy stuff.
Oh. It was this article in the New York Times on memory and how memory is stored. It's not stored in the brain like a hard drive. It's has something to do with the way you learned it. You received it in the first place and going back. And so it can get confused about just hearing somebody say something and then you take in something with a little more substantial
kind of short circuit.
Yeah, and you confuse it, and this is why Chinese whispers, they call it, or telephone in the game when you're little.
Yeah.
And you're telling somebody, and they tell somebody, and you tell them, by the time it gets down to the 20th person, it's
a different story.
Convoluted. Anyway, between those two gigs, I had 5 days. I went and took the train. We went to London, and I took the train down to Brighton, about 100 miles south, and that's where Sam Duke lives, and he started a new project called Cuz, and recorded bass and drums for a new album there. And I also got to pedal. He loaned me a bike. I got lost once. Their streets aren't laid out on a grid, you know. Europe is very twisted, twirly little street, you know, they're old towns. Cow paths, probably like Boston, you know. And so I got lost, but I remember Sam, I'm calking at his pad, and I remember him living above a funeral home. So I found another funeral home, and I figured that, because I even asked two lady cops on the state in nowhere.
Wow.
And a lot of the streets, it lasts one block, you know. So I figured, well, this other funeral home probably knows where the competition is. And sure enough, they did.
Yeah, if a dead guy wasn't here, where might he be?
Yeah.
Right. So, but I also got to paddle the first time in Atlantic Ocean, in English Channel. I got to paddle, and it was a very unusual day for England. There wasn't a cloud in the sky, so the water was like Florida, like green, you know?
Wow.
And very calm, and paddled between the burned-up pier and the not burned up here. They have this candy there, you know. They call it Brighton Rock. Yeah. That was a whole different meaning. You're going down the road and you see this store that says Brighton Rock. And rock shops. Rock house. You don't want to call it.
So Brighton's kind of like English beach town?
Yeah. It's on the water. And, a lot of music people live there. They got a big scene. Me and Sam went there, this studio where he did Go Team album called Brighton Electric, and just went up there and jammed bass. He played drums and I played bass. I borrowed the bass player Jamie's bass. So so I didn't have to schlep it around. But it was a great bass. It was like a Japanese copy of Fender Jazz. It was happening. And I brought my djembe, my favorite recording outfit. The studios get sweaty, you know? This must happen then. Flannels for the other activity. For recording, I like djembe. And I just started jamming with him. Because the way, you know, his band, the way his boss works his band, he takes samples and then they make songs with him. You know? So I thought, well, shit, let's just make our own samples. So I did bass and drum tracks, and now he's going to put it together. Right? And I'll fly him in other stuff, like spiel or whatever, or other bass parts, what he wants, but he can play everything else. So that's how we're going to do cuts.
Cool.
Actually, the first day I flew into Belgium, I recorded with Steve McKay with a French, Czech, and a Belgian cat, and we did two Steve McKay songs. Then my Italian friend Stefano Lilia, we're going to hear one of his songs. He asked me to give him a bass lick. So I was testing out this unit I brought over, and I did that and sent it to him. And then in between that Isle of Wight and the Dublin gig, happened to fall on Bloom's Day.
Bitchin'.
Which, yeah, Raymond's birthday, but it's also the day that James Joyce's Ulysses takes place. And we're playing the gig there, which was righteous. You know, I got to walk around again on Bloom's Day. I was there 4 years ago, right, for the
anniversary.
Centennial? Is that how you say it? 100th year anniversary is June 16th, 1904, when it actually went down. It's supposed to have happened. And the day after the gig, on the 17th, me and Steve McKay go into this studio. It's in a horse stable called Ashdown, and recorded with this Dublin band called Estelle. We did this last September, did five songs. We're going to play one of those songs later. But we did a whole album's worth because we were there the whole day. The other one was only a couple hours before we flew out. So I did a lot of recording. Speaking of recording, Talia, your ongoing music project, Sola Musica, you have a song for us here.
Yes, it's a song that I recently finished. It's called Thank You.
Cool.
Then we're going to hear it right now, okay?
Okay, great, thank
Sweet.
You.
Sweet. Thank you.
From Pedro Show. We just heard La Grunta by Position Normal, and then a couple things from Kyoka. Suzukami Opa OPPA. How would you say that?
OPPA.
Opa. And before that was Moise. And Moise is something that she flowed me this track, you know, and asked for bass. And did you get that from
mm-hmm.
me? Very. I couldn't tell where the beat was.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell what was going on. So I just came up with a lick and just went for it. And some of it seems like it lines
yeah,
up.
I like it. I like how it turned out.
I don't know, but it was also a good test for my new... you know, I was cleaning out my practice pad, and I found this all two preamp that I was using when my Eden was out of action for a little bit. It gives me a lot more punch. So, but I like this song. It's so different, strange.
Mm-hmm.
It's like... And before that, we heard Mark. Oh, yeah, he did five songs with Estelle last September. One was a cover of Funhouse, and then four we just made up on the spot. And when I asked them the names, what they were, because we didn't call them anything, and then when they mixed them, and they come out next month. What are the titles? And they're Matthew, Mark, Ruben. So that one was Mark. They're named after the
Gospel.
Yeah, the Gospel. Actually, they're named after. Those guys didn't write them.
Yeah, they got the credit.
Yeah, they got the credit. And we started off with the solo music of Thank You.
Yay.
And that's Talia's attempt at writing happy music. Right?
Right.
And who's joined us?
Peek.
Hey, Peek.
Peek. Hi.
Now, Peek said she brought a buttload of rants.
Mostly in my head.
Huh?
You want me to get at it now? It's pretty grim stuff.
You maybe piece it out. You want to put one big blurt?
No, I'm not going
to
like
the
little segment each break.
It's just unfiltered.
Like every time you get done with some music, we hear you go off.
No, it's unfiltered thoughts, and I see what you guys think about it. It has to do with death.
You mean all this the stuff you brought
pick up from last
all
week's
filtered.
Top
yes.
of the conversation.
Surprisingly.
Well, is it filtered?
I just tried to...
Three time use depends? Or you think that's wise to reuse depends?
Flip side.
Oh.
More mileage.
Recycling.
Sure.
Green.
It all depends on what.
So okay, so you got some death thoughts again.
Yeah. Again. this time it's other people.
They were filtered last time.
It was.
The voice gets loud now.
It came up because of there's two people with last names start with Carr, died this week. George Carlin and local bass player Dave Carpenter. Do you know him?
No.
He's one of the probably the best. He played every kinds of music, as far as I know. But he mostly was known in jazz and fusion and mostly jazz. So I was actually my overall topic of it about it is that I was kind of pissed that these people are
How
dead.
How dare they die?
How dare they die? And then I thought about it further. It's like I'm a very selfish person because I really
you should let them die.
Yeah, because they chose, practically, they died a little bit earlier than they should because they do drugs. They did drugs at some point.
Oh, George Carlin was 71, though. He was
well, yeah, I mean,
but... an older man.
But, yeah, he quit...
How old was Dave?
48.
Oh, wow. Strange.
And they both died of heart attack.
Yeah, well, 40s is kind of heavy for guys with heart attacks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But George Carlin quit...
But he had a lot of heart trouble too, a couple surgeries.
Yeah, supposedly he had a huge.
And look at his life. He was doing gigs. I think last week he did a gig.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's kind of neat. Not
yeah, right up to the end.
Wiping your ass.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
He walked to the hospital himself, huh?
Really?
That's what I heard.
Wow.
Yeah.
So in a way. I mean, it is kind of lame because he probably had a lot more to contribute. You know about George Carlin in my life, right?
No, I don't. Do tell.
I thought you never saw the Wee Jam Econo?
No.
No.
Sorry. Oh, by the way, I don't know anything about you.
Okay, if you ever get a chance to see that thing, there's a story about how I met D. Boone. And he jumped out of a tree on me, okay, at Peck Park here.
You mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, well, he thought I was a friend of his. He's playing with his friends. He thought I was a guy named Eskimo, nickname. And I'm not Eskimo. And his friends had gone off, so it was just me and him. So I said, well, I just moved into the estate. And they were called the estates. Next to his, basically, Fridge, you know, a little newer stucco. But, in fact, I don't think he's had stucco. So, yeah, this was a new version of Proj, stucco boxes. So, hey, I'll show you where I live. And as I'm walking to my pad across baseball fields, he starts reeling off all these bits. And I think, I've never heard this before. And I think this has to be the smartest man in the world. I mean, we're 12 years old, right? And get home, you know, and talking to him, and more and more of these bits. He's flying out. I'm like, whoa. And the next day, he wants to show me his pad, you know, a block away. And I go there, and he plays me this record, and it's called Class Clown by George Carlin. Uh-huh. And all them bits are from the record. He didn't make any of them up. It's like, D-Bone. Because I was really amazed. I thought he was just making this shit up on the fly.
So his level of smartness went down.
Huh?
So his level of smartness went down in your mind?
No, I was just like... No, it didn't go down. It always stayed up. Because then he was talking about history and stuff, and I knew he didn't make that up. So. Just because you relate other people's stuff to me, he's a good editor, good chooser.
Yeah.
Finder of material. He never claimed it was his. He was just feeling it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, whoa. You know? So it was amazing. So George Carlin goes way back with me that way, the early connection with D. Boone.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and Joe Boone, too, is, you know, my brother, a couple of years younger. Because he ended up memorizing all these. He then got these other records. I think that might have been his third record. But there was more in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember their titles now, but memorize them and then the Cheech and Chong records, and, you know, of course, and just memorize these things. And I think it helped with music because by memorizing these bits, it helped
get
song structure, this kind of thing. And then in fact, we even took it further. We would take Mad Magazine and the tape recorder, like, do our versions of these Mad Magazine parodies. So we're getting ready for gigs and we're putting together.
Yeah, training.
I just think it was instrumental That and meeting Roy Mendez Lopez. I told you about talking.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, the guy who showed me and Z Boone how to copy songs. This
so you're gonna
lived in his car. Mm-hmm. Somebody tracked him down and found his phone number. I hadn't talked to him in 30.
Wow, so you're gonna hook up with him?
Yeah, after this tour, he's in San Diego. He raised a family. He's retired. Mm-hmm. Playing the guitar over the phone. I couldn't believe it. Roy Mendez Lopez, incredible cat. A lot of it wasn't just music too. He was like part of the pure part of hippie. That was very
like a philosopher type guy.
Yeah, yeah. He got into Eastern thought, Krishna stuff. He's an amazing man. Had a huge influence, and I just never saw him again, you know? So this guy at the Lomax Institute, Don Fleming, in New York City, using these internet tools like Lexis and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He narrowed it down. Somebody with that age, with that name.
Wow.
You know, guessed around. I don't even know his exact age. You know, somewhere in his 60s now. And, you know, and there was a San Diego number. And he floated to me, try it.
Wow.
I got maybe a good hunch. And I called up and I knew as soon as his voice.
Wow.
He got like a Gandhi voice or something?
Practice, practice.
Wow,
practice.
So cool.
Yeah, beautiful.
That's
man.
Creepy.
Beautiful man.
Yeah.
Taught himself the Vivaldi, the Bach, all this. Incredible cat. Really good in flamenco. That's why Deepu got into flamenco, because Roy Mendez Lopez. So him and George Garland, T-Rex, and Blue Oyster Cult. These are early things in my music. So it was sad to hear about George Garland, but I like the idea of him getting to do work.
Yeah, up to the end.
Up to the end.
Yeah. So was Dave Carpenter. He was actually playing a gig like a day before.
The day before. So that's kind of neat, too. I wish I would have been able to see him play. You should have. Why didn't you turn me on to him?
This guy's going to die tomorrow. Come and check him out. It's your last chance.
He personally. I mean, he's an awesome musician, but he personally creeped me out.
George Carlin?
No, Carpenter.
Oh.
See, Carpenter's local.
Creeped you out?
Creeped me out.
Oh, creeped you out.
Well, you know, the only couple of few occasions I hung with him, he was kind of invited me over to his house, kind of thing. Like, I don't know you. And and the other time was, like, you know, join him over the drug area in the bag of the baked potatoes.
Oh, in the valley.
In the valley.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've been to that club. It's a little pad. Really little pad.
Oh, baked potato?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's one reason I kind of got pissed at, because I am very, like, open-minded, and, like, oh, people choose to do drugs and whatever, that's just their choice, you know, individual liberty and freedom.
Yeah.
But at the end of it all, if you are actually have something to contribute to your society, you kind of owe it to people to live a healthier life and do that work that you are known for, and it's kind of your purpose, is to put out work or... That's why I feel like...
Letting people down by being wasted.
Yeah.
All right.
So, I don't know, just...
Your mom probably doesn't like it either. Although, like Sid, right? His mom helped him shoot up and stuff.
Here, son, let me help you find
that thing.
In fact,
the theory is I think she killed him.
Wow.
Now, that's the theory. It was an intentional overdose by her. Or something. So, yeah, that's sad, but... You could say it was unfortunate, not put so much blame on.
I mean, and you know, it just makes me think. I mean, death is actually.
So you rant not against death so much as drug use.
Well, it's a
squandering artistic contribution.
Yeah, it's like sometimes you're a vessel. You know, it's not about you anymore. You're a vessel to put out
obligation.
Work. Yeah, you have obligations to stay alive, goddamn.
Yeah, you can't party tonight. You gotta contribute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I wish I would have been able to see him play.
Yeah. Sure. Nelson, I saw Nels yesterday. He had played a gig with him a couple, 10 years ago or so. He said that guy's a virtuoso. You know, yeah, he's insane. He can do anything. He plays upright as good as electric. The first time I saw him, he was playing with Mose Ellison.
I know Mose Ellison.
Yeah.
Great old piano player.
A lot of New York guys, jazz guys, when they come here, he is the bass player.
It was first call.
Yeah, first call. So,
wish I would have saw him anymore. Yeah. That's very sad. God, he was younger than me.
Yeah. It's a... Yeah, so I did bring a song.
Let's listen to him right now.
I'm a modern man, a man for the millennium, digital and smoke-free, a diversified multicultural postmodern deconstructionist, politically, anatomically, and ecologically incorrect. I've been uplinked and downloaded, I've been inputted and outsourced, I know the upside of downsizing, I know the downside of upgrading. I'm a high-tech lowlife, a cutting-edge, state-of-the-art, bi-coastal multitasker, and I can give you a gigabyte in a nanosecond. I'm new wave, but I'm old school, and my inner child is outward bound. I'm a hot-wired, heat-seeking, warm-hearted, cool customer, voice-activated and biodegradable. I interface with my database is in cyberspace, so I'm interactive, I'm hyperactive, and from time to time I'm radioactive. Behind the eight ball, ahead of the curve, riding the wave, dodging the bullet, pushing the envelope. I'm on point, on task, on message, and off drugs. I got no need for coke and speed. I got no urge to binge and purge. I'm in the moment, on the edge, over the top, but under the radar. A high-concept, low-profile, medium-range ballistic missionary. A streetwise smart bomb. A top-gun bottom feeder. I wear power ties. I tell power lies. I take power naps. I run victory laps. I'm a totally ongoing Bigfoot slam-dunk rainmaker with a proactive outreach. A raging workaholic. A working rageaholic. Out of rehab and in denial. I got a personal trainer, a personal shopper, a personal assistant, and a personal agenda. You can't shut me up, you can't dumb me down, because I'm tireless and I'm wireless. I'm an alpha male on beta blockers. I'm a non-believer, I'm an overachiever, laid back and fashion forward. Up front, down home, low rent, high maintenance. I'm supersized, long-lasting, high-definition, fast-acting, oven-ready, and built to last. A hands-on, foot-loose, knee-jerk head case, prematurely post-traumatic, and I have a love child who sends me hate mail. But I'm feeling, I'm caring, I'm healing, I'm sharing. A supportive, bonding, nurturing primary caregiver. My output is down, but my income is up. I take a short position on the long bond, and my revenue stream has its own cash flow. I read junk mail, I eat junk food, I buy junk bonds, I watch trash sports. I'm gender-specific, capital-intensive, user-friendly, and lactose-intolerant. I like rough sex. I like tough love. I use the F word in my email, and the software on my hard drive is hardcore, no soft porn. I bought a microwave at a mini mall. I bought a minivan at a megastore. I eat fast food in the slow lane. I'm toll-free, bite-size, ready-to-wear, and I come in all sizes. A fully equipped, factory-authorized, hospital-tested, clinically proven, scientifically formulated medical miracle. I've been pre-washed, pre-cooked, pre-heated, pre-screened, pre-approved, pre-packaged, post-dated, freeze-dried, double-wrapped, and vacuum-packed, and I have an unlimited broadband capacity. I'm a rude dude, but I'm the real deal. Lean and mean, cocked, locked, and ready to rock. Rough, tough, and hard to bluff. I take it slow. I go with the flow. I ride with the tide. I got glide in my stride. Driving and moving, sailing and spinning, jiving and grooving, wailing and winning. I don't snooze, so I don't lose. I keep the pedal to the metal and the rubber on the road. I party hardy, and lunchtime is crunch time. I'm hanging in, there ain't no doubt, and I'm hanging tough. Over and out.
He's like, Juan from Bebo Show. That was George Carlin with Modern Man.
Yeah, George.
His bit. Well, the man had something memorized.
Yeah.
Before that, we heard Pushball by Alan Pasqua, and it had Dave Carpenter on bass. Much respect to both gentlemen.
Rest in
peace.
Sad
at their passing, yeah.
Glad you were
but
here.
But probably because they were artistic, there is a resonance.
Yeah, they left a
still
big wake. Big
yeah,
wake.
They left some wakes. We're done with the first hour of the June 29th, 2008 Bob from Pedro Show, Hotel Tech Bar 2. June 29th, 2008. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. We'll be right back.
La la la. four more seats. Triple picture. It's alright. Seattle,
Hot from Pedro show. Started the second hour off with Truck Sweat by Tobacco. And then we heard Takusen from Yuki Kawana. Epilogue from Zipes. Good Lord's Son by Jesus, which is my friend Stefano Pelia. In Espanol, E-I-X-A?
Sometimes it's Asia.
Or
Asa.
Asa. So Zipesa, it should have been. Zipes. Z-I-P-E-I-X.
Or could be Mesha.
How do you say that one? I just had to read this name in graduation last week.
Yeah, Z-X-O-T-C-H-T.
Not enough vowels. You know, you say social.
Social, yeah. See, the X is kind of Indian. It's not really Espanol.
Right. It is Indian.
Right. It came from the Aztec. Yeah. And, yeah. So.
It's actually Mexico, not Mexico. The Indians would say Mexico.
Mexico. But they, with the Spanish, it's like an H almost.
Mexico.
Yeah, it's like an H. So that's what I'm saying. It's a pay.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't mean to fuck that up, Jose. Lo siento. And then, Stefano Pelia and his buddy. God, what was his name? Sorry. Your Fratello. Good Lord, Son, Lion Jesus. And then we heard the Yokai no Uda trio with Sequence de Se Alo Ali. That's a French word. E-U-L-L-A-L-I-E. Alo Ali. You know?
No. I took French,
mood,
but
no
I failed
mood.
French.
You guys?
I failed French.
I tell you,
I think Spanish.
Okay, look. You got another rant. It's got to be a littler one because Brother Matt's got the
spin cycle.
Go for it. Let it cut loose.
Cut loose. I don't
Is
have a little.
Is that your rag sheet?
Yes, my rag sheet.
We'll start ragging.
I can't. It's just a bunch of thoughts. Oh, here's a short one. You know when you go through like lives and try to find meanings in it, and you all of a sudden hear it in songs, you know.
Your own life.
Yeah, and it's like a really fun coincidence that you know you're trying to find words into what you're feeling, and all of a sudden
a song has illuminated something in your life.
Yeah, and it's like especially with the iTunes shuffle business, and all of a sudden the song it comes up randomly and starts saying stuff that you're feeling. It's just
trip
weird.
When it throws random sets that goes perfect together.
I'm sorry?
I trip on when the iPod throws random sets together that are perfect.
So
it's like, man, I couldn't have planned this out.
You were very generous.
I fed it right.
I was probably scanning all your fucking top choices.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
Picks,
yeah, right? Genres that are all classical.
American Woman, 5,000 plays. Butted up against Smoke on the Water. And, oh, I can't believe this! So this is a rant. This makes you angry.
Well, it's part of. You know, it's.
Like, how dare they write the song of my life?
No. I'm not angry about that one. It's just, well, the song content is like.
You want us like to be amazed about that?
Is it? Ah.
Oh, Sean's here.
Hello.
Hi, Sean.
Hello,
Johnny.
Hi.
I guess it coincides with what I was talking about with the death. It's there's a song that came up yesterday by Kings of Convenience. Is the lyrics when failure is always the best way to learn. Which is like that's
so they shouldn't be singing about death because these two important people died.
Oh no, not like that at all. I'm just feeling.
Or it's very neat that they wrote a song.
To me, it just hits me while I was thinking about death and what it means to me for people who are left living, and ultimately I've learned a lot when somebody significant dies, because it's like, oh, that teaches me that my moment matters, my daily routine and what I do matters. So it's kind of like.
What if it was a Casey and the Sunshine Band? So that's the way I like it.
Then I'll start dancing. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
just started dancing.
But I just, it doesn't
the
occur to me
have
to
this,
dance.
This kind of power.
Yeah.
They're like a unifier.
Yeah. I was thinking about that. It's like artists have this this way of expressing different sentiment that all of us humans go through. You know, sometimes it's verbally, sometimes it's musically, but with lyrics, I think women are more in tune to just pay attention to lyrics.
Yeah.
Song with lyrics, but
You mean like Ice Cube songs?
Yeah, oh, totally. Especially. I look forward to live my life by that rule.
No, you know, the world is a stage. And
gangster. I can be a thug. Don't push me, man.
Go toe-to-toe. But look, I'm still not clear about what you're angry about.
Well, I'm not angry about the music part. It's almost like a
it was about them guys dying on drugs.
Well, the dead people makes me think about living, and while I'm thinking about living, this music sort of reinforces of, you know, just everyday life and everyday sentiment that what we somehow take for granted, and sometimes only take failures or death or breaking up with your boyfriend, girlfriends to start thinking about what really matters to you. You know, it's like it takes dark to see light kind of thing. So, but music is kind of overall overtone thing that it's usually neutral.
Like Ice Cube.
Like Ice Cube.
No. Yeah,
it's been
melody,
yeah.
Yeah. Stories.
Yeah, it's a composition. But yeah, I was thinking a lot about death this week apparently, and then, you know, I think for days about it, and at the end, to stop myself from being so pissed at people leaving so soon, is that at the end, really, it doesn't matter how much contributions you've done to society, is really nothing really matters. I mean, you know, in the scheme of things.
Is that like a Buddha? Isn't the Buddha thing teach you to kind of like accept it?
Buddha things is teaches you a little bit more acceptance to your circumstances without attaching your emotion to it. Like accepting that, okay, life is shitty, that's normal, then you just move on.
Or death, we're talking about.
Or death is normal. Yeah, it's a part of life. Yeah, it's a part of no life.
Is it in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make?
Or
as Beal.
Beatles is like a religion, so practically fine. No, but yeah, it's like I don't know. It just makes me more urgent in like trying to make my life a little bit more meaningful, but you know, with a thing that kept in mind that if I die or anything, it really doesn't matter, really, because the dead, they you know, life when it's done is done, but what most affecting is the people who the dead left behind, you know.
What about works?
Works.
Yeah, I've been into this poem, Leaves of Grass. That's 150 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Words.
Guys, way past dust now.
Yeah.
Those words are there.
Yeah. Well,
lots of things written down, but I've come to embrace these words, so I'm grateful, Mr. Whippin.
Yeah, and I trip out on that too with poetry. And
that's what they are.
And yeah, and words. It's just. You know, all these things that I'm talking about, the arts, the music, the words, the poetry, photography, whatever, it's like, it's so transcending the human sentiment that it's kind of outside of ourselves. That's why I call those guys that passed away, how dare they die, because they were just vessels of this work that they were, you know, pulling out.
It's interesting, the last poem in Leaves of Grass, the first edition, talks about, the last few lines are about death.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, there isn't any.
There isn't what?
There isn't any.
There's no death.
Yeah.
That's what the Vedic scriptures say.
The scripture?
Yeah, the Vedic, ancient.
The Vedic hymns.
Like, they're like the most ancient scripture that's written down.
Uh-huh.
Well, Hindu, right.
They say that the body is just this temporary vessel.
Yeah.
Earth suit.
Yeah, it's matter that dies, but our soul, our spirit,
mm-hmm.
it was never born and it will never die. Like you continue on, and usually, like according to the Vedic scriptures, you depending on your karma, you come back in a certain body form or on another planet, or you get to hang out with God.
That's kind of what I was raised with the understanding.
With the Buddha thing.
Yeah.
Buddhism more refined.
Yeah.
Or even a Protestant kind of angle on it.
Yeah. And well, Buddha is actually, like, according to the Vedic scriptures, is recognizes Buddha as God, in incarnation of God.
The story that he incarnated, like, in so many forms over the thousands and thousands of years, and there's a woman form, but then it brings back to the mythologies of things, which is, I just think that all these stories are just symbol, another art form to teach us.
Yeah, yeah, right.
You know, of how to live in the moment and how to behave in the moment.
And he talks about stuff like that too in Leaves of Grass, about all these different religious movements and people through the era. He says they all had something to say at their time.
Mm-hmm.
And something, quite a poem. But it's tricky, the work lives on. And I can only imagine the guy. I mean, we know some things about his life. We know a lot about his life. He had a lot of hurt.
Yeah.
Fucked up family trips.
Yeah.
And but really what he's known for is the work.
So
George Carlin left works.
Yeah.
Dave Carpenter left works.
And that's kind of also another pressure. Like, once you die, do you really leave something behind that actually would matter to anybody else?
I've been thinking about this, like, with performances.
Uh huh.
Because there's nothing left physical, but you did play in front of people, so you put memories, and maybe they told people of the gig, and it's just a weird thing.
And yeah, it would creep me out that this recording would probably stay on somewhere way after I die.
Yeah.
Like this show here.
Like
I'll be talking about.
It'll be proof to how fucking stupid we are.
Use your
any doubts?
Right, just listen to this.
Yes, document it. We got years worth of documents.
Yeah, it's like, oh. That because people tend to get glorified after they
glorified,
die.
This would be a great,
No, just listen to this shit.
Yeah,
she didn't know what
she was
talking
about.
But
one thing we do have that is transcendent. We got Brother Matt to bring us a spin cycle.
Cool.
Power does what it wants, and now they're just more naked about it. Now they just put it right out front and say, this is what we're doing to you folks. And everybody's got a cell phone that makes pancakes, so they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to make any trouble. The people have been bought off by gizmos and toys in this country, and no one questions things anymore. I use the sledgehammer on Bush. I like moving in and really hurting them. I don't like this, let's be cute and let's be clever. I like smashing them. That's the only way to take care of them. I think power does what it wants. Power does what it wants. And now they're just more naked about it. Now they just put it right out front and say, this is what we're doing to you folks. And everybody's got a cell phone that makes pancakes, so they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to make any trouble. Now, people have been bought off by gizmos and toys in this country, and no one questions things anymore. I like smashing, 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 smashing.
We'll be right back.
Thank you very much for the spin cycle, Brother Matt.
Cool.
Devin Hoff has joined us.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Hell Ride, not from Las Vegas, but San Francisco.
Wow.
Via the I-5, Golden State Freeway.
Welcome.
Peak is
Thank you.
Flooding us with phony info.
I didn't. You made that up in your head.
And we'll be playing a song from your new solo album.
Awesome.
When we come back, because we're at the end of the second hour of the June 29th, 2008 Bebro Show. Hold tight for hour three. June 29, 2008. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. And here's something from Mr. Devin Hoff off his new record called Solo Bass. You want to say something about your record, Devin?
I don't know what to say. It was recorded by Jamie Stewart, my neighbor and band member, and just kind of a vanity project of trying to make a band out of one bass.
And by band member, you mean Good for Cows?
No, it's Shushu.
Shushu, that's right.
Yeah.
Because this record's called Solo Bass, so I was figuring maybe you don't have a band member.
Yeah.
One band member.
This is just me and the bass.
Or it's the guy in the band who has a member.
And the member is the bass, maybe. Let's hope.
Is that like Onis?
Yeah.
Onin.
It's an Oninist record for sure. This record is all about Oninism.
That was my. I wanted to be able to put that on my work visa as evasive Oninist. You want a goal in life? That's my goal.
Evasive Oninist.
Evasive. I told Nels that in the studio. I guess he has a. He was doing a solo record at the time. Mm-hmm. Onin. Or it's Onin. A piece called Onin.
Yeah.
That's an awesome piece.
So maybe it's a guy thing, huh?
Certainly.
So anyway, we're going to do this song called The Deed.
What does that
you
mean?
You want to tell us about Onin? Yeah. He's in the Bible. He spilled the seed. He pulled it out. You don't know about that?
No, I don't.
Yeah, it was deemed a sin for doing that. Yeah.
And so now and everybody, when you do things that involve that kind of behavior...
It's for procreation, right? That's why you do that, to have babies. It was more complicated than that. It was like the brother's sister or something. He had to marry him.
Yeah.
But anyway, he screwed up by not letting nature... And so it's sometimes referred to as being kind of hedonistic, just pleasure... Person, no higher, or that being the high goal, I don't know.
Yeah, it's the highest goal.
The Harold Bloom intro to the 150th edition of Leaves of Grass, that's what he called women.
An onanist?
Big time.
Yeah.
And, but he thought it was neat. He said he was jacking off, he used a bunch of people. Masturbating on the cosmos. I think he refers to that in the poem in so many words, within himself. So, yeah. I don't know. We're going to do a song called The Deed, though. Not to condemn Onin for his deed. People can make up your own mind about that, but your tune, The Deed.
Yeah.
Because this is actually one piece split in several little pieces, huh?
Yeah, the whole thing is kind of, I guess there's like a couple different suites on the record. One that's all improvised and one that was all, I guess, improvised beforehand, you know. Hard to tell. Yeah, prepared improvised. And then a couple that are written through, you know, in the middle.
The thematic thread.
The thematic thread, a lot of the thematic thread is taken from a couple of different aspects of anarchist history and anarchist theory. Some of the tunes are named after... There's the alarm and the torch and the blast, and named after, you know, early American.
Some of those on the show.
Yeah. Named after, right on. Yeah, and those are taken from the names of early 20th century American anarchist newspapers and late 1800s. And then there's this whole thing of the ideal and the word and the deed, and it comes from this whole Emma Goldman thing that, you know.
Yeah.
First, you
Emma Goldman.
Yeah.
I like the D because it sounds like a saw, like it's going to work.
Uh-huh.
Like it's working on it.
Chicka, chicka.
Yeah, I love it.
That's kind of how my technique might resemble more of a saw than an actual bow, too, I think.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I wanted you to voice this because the work has no lyrics.
Yeah.
So for you to explain it, that people might get another perspective on it. It's also a very beautiful bass playing.
Thank you, man.
So here's the D.
Thank you.
business. Champion of the paranormal game, creature without existence, realize the transcendence. It's overflowing out of the history. He never might be or not, nor is he just drifting.
Watt from Pedro Show. We just heard something from Bob Lee. Bob Lee recorded with Backbiter. Isn't that Jonathan Hall and... God, what's his name? Seaford. Heath Seaford. Sorry about that. And that's a tune from their new session called Backbiter, and a tune called Tongue Kiss Girl. Bob Lee said it was his favorite one they did with singing. And then we heard Yukahana before that with Twirling Batons in My Head. And then something brand new from 5471, a Tokyo band I played with them a couple times in February, and they recorded with Steve Albini in Chicago. And the song is called Idiot, Awake of the No-X. They got a very interesting drummer named Bobo. He plays a little, maybe 5-inch snare, and a kick drum, and a hi-hat. That's it.
Nice.
He's grooving, though, man. He's slamming. And the leader of the band is the bass player. His name's Kentaro. This guy... Not the smiley stereotype you might think, you know, from there. More of like...
No, that's more, I feel like, more stereotype.
Like you have to make real, more serious. Yeah.
Japanese.
And, but he's a really intelligent cat. He taught himself German to read Thomas Mann. And so.
Whoa.
And I had an interesting... Wow. I was reading a lot of these Haruki Murakami books. I like his writing and stuff. And so we're sitting after the gig in Nagoya talking about things, and I want to know what his views is, you know? Or like that. And he says, ha! Fake Kafka. I go, yeah? He goes, you want to know real Japanese? I said, okay. And he stands up and he pulls down his pants and he lights his dick hairs on fire with a cigarette lighter.
Whoa.
And
holy that's
what
shit.
That's what I thought. He's like, fuck Murakami, fuck Mishima. And I was like, whoa. So it's been, you know, something like starting to smell. And
yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite a demonstration. And so it left an impression on me. Talked about other things too. He's a great cat. So he definitely has been that way.
Wow.
And so Steve McKay, this last run with the Stooges, gave me a Murakami book when I haven't read. I started reading a couple words I couldn't read anymore because this image keeps coming back to the side next to me at the table. So, you know, no disrespect to you, Haruki, or anybody.
The desired effect, though. From the
no, but this is aesthetics, right? Everybody's got their own take. And I said, you like Faulkner? Yeah, yeah. William Faulkner, okay. So I was really impressed in a way. I mean, you know, he was a mincing words or images. Or so I thought right then, because a band that played every gig with me was Light. And before 5471, we heard a song from their new album called Ghost Dance. And I really liked the, maybe he's 23 years old, bass player for Light, named June. And I thought, man, I want to make a three bass band with June, brother June, and brother Kataro. Mm-hmm. You know, just go over there and try it. Their work for three is San.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because I got dose for 23 years, so let's try some San. Also the first word of our town here, Pedro, huh?
Yeah.
So it's all coming together. I thought this must mean something. So I want to make a three bass band with it. Maybe no practice them. So shoot from the hip. It's a scene where he likes it. I got to do an interview with the Big Bass magazine over there with June. It was really interesting. Because Light is a band with a lot, what do you call it, math rock?
Uh-huh.
A lot of precision and things, and this week came across with him talking. Luckily, we had an interpreter who knew a lot of U.S. I think he had Western parents. His name was George. He was great because of my slang and all this, but he got it across really good. And even though Brother June's a young man, he's looking at the thing like, I would never play out of tune, you know.
this kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So, well, sometimes, you know, I mean, you're on a string bass, and out of tune playing happens.
Yeah, it's impossible to avoid 100%.
Right, that's why Leo Fender called that thing the precision.
Yeah, exactly. Because it had frets, yeah. I mean, you shoot for like a healthy 90%.
Right.
On a good night. Or a good
day. Right, but there's this other thing, too, this emotion, this tiny little thing called emotion.
Yeah, you can
try to squeeze in the prowess. Yeah. And now this is what I was trying to get over to him. And off the mic, Talia was talking about nothing comes with age. And sometimes I hear older guys actually wanting you to get away from the technique. That was something that was more dazzling as a young person.
Yeah.
And want to get years come by and kind of show you there's more. Mm. And
absolutely.
So, I mean, there's something about sheer technical stuff. But there's other things too. Why you like a folk song or something?
Well, yeah.
Why did somebody like Bartok go to the villages to get the old melodies?
To hear the old folk songs.
Even though he had all this technical ability, he could put together a symphony, script out a huge thing with all these components and have incredible players playing for him. He had to go back to the well.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where all music comes from too, you know. I mean, to me, it all comes at some point from some sort of folk tradition, something that's, you know what I mean?
It wasn't really about technical.
Yeah.
They got enough off the ground to get people dancing, but...
Yeah, yeah, and some people... Well, I don't know. For me, I go back too, and you see, like, what's the music that lasts with me? I mean, I'm not, you know, like, in my mid-30s now. What's the music that's lasted my whole life so far? And the stuff that's shredding isn't it or super precise, you know what I mean? The stuff you still want to hear at this point, you know, I want to hear Sabbath, and I want to hear Jimmy Garrison, you know, and stuff like that. That's not the shredding stuff. I don't really like want to sit around listening to Scott LaFaro all day.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to hear Jimmy Garrison. I want to hear Charlie Hayden.
Who's the great cat with the intonation? He's kind of a younger guy. Carmen McBride.
Christian McBride.
Christian McBride. He's got really good intonation.
Mm-hmm. He's a great player. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think
a song with Betty Green, a piano player. And who else was there? I can't remember the drummer's name. Damn it, I'm sorry. The Impedibone song at Catalina.
Recently, or?
But then I saw Betty Green with Mr. Ray Brown.
A while back, there. Yeah.
And he was like yelling while he was playing. I liked it. You know? Yeah. People tell me you really like golf. The gigs were something to do with.
In between. Yeah, he was
that's
old school.
Right.
Yeah, he was old school.
Yeah, yeah.
He's one of those guys, I think he felt like he did his practicing when he was younger.
Yeah.
He got it out of the way, and after that, it's just gigs. You know?
Kay had a book from him. I think he was at Pittsburgh or something. And the word was, when he was young, coming up, Pettiford?
Yeah, Oscar Pettiford.
He was the big daddy.
Yeah,
that he
right.
was looking to. And, of course, Mr. Paul Chambers.
Yeah.
Who was like one of these very emotional players but had some technique.
Yeah, he's my guy for that school.
He could walk anything.
Yeah, and it sounds everything sounds like music, you know. Sometimes you hear those jazz bass players take solos and it doesn't sound like lines that another instrument would want to play. And Paul Chambers, even his walking lines, it sounds like something that you just would like you would sing, you would hum.
Big time.
You know, it's not just where your hands fall.
That's why Train wrote him a song where the bass line is like carrying the deal.
Yeah.
But what made you interested in stand up bass? You were a boy, right?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things. Yeah, my dad's a guitar player. And so I started trying to play bass because he and my brother both played guitar. And so I had to be different.
Yeah.
You know? And also, I wasn't going to be able to keep up at that point. I think partially it was like, you know, baby brother stuff. I didn't want to suck at what my big brother was already good at, so I took up bass. and then I played electric bass first for like 6 months and then started gravitating towards the string bass.
Soon. Maybe you wanted to be in a band with them.
Yeah, well, I did. And then we were, yeah.
And you were a band.
Yeah, that's why.
Wow.
I moved to San Francisco actually to play. We had a band together. I don't know. At certain times in American history, we'd call it a punk band. I don't know what we'd call it.
Because I don't know a lot of cats who end up playing with their pop. One I just recently did a spiel with was Stephen Droz from the Flame of Lips.
Yeah.
And he was the drummer in his pop's band.
Oh, he was?
It was like a country swing band. 6-7 years old, he's playing the drums in his pop's band.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, my first gig.
Ricky.
My first gig was with my dad. And yeah. And it was like, it was great because he'd tell me if I sounded like shit.
No problem.
Yeah, he'd be like, man, you need to practice
Second
more.
Out loud.
Yeah, he's like, you gotta stop hanging out with some of those friends of yours and practice a little more.
Get the woodshed.
Yeah, it was a good way. I realized later that's how he kept me away from the bad seeds that were kind of, you know, my friends who were drug dealers and stuff. And he's like, oh, you just need to practice. Like, oh, you're right. It totally worked. Stokes kept me straight.
Did you go to school?
I didn't go to college. I studied privately. I had a jazz teacher who was a friend of my dad's, and then this named Peter Huffaker, who was a great jazz player that wound up in Colorado for professional reasons, I guess. And then there was this guy named Ed Krolik, who was a classical bass teacher, and he had been the bass prof at Indiana, which has a good like classical string department. And so when I was in high school, he retired to my hometown. So retiring for him meant taking a full load of students, and so I was really lucky because I got a couple of years of really solid foundation with him.
Sure, sure.
And then
were
I did
you in the school band, high school?
Yeah, I was in the high school orchestra. The teacher of the high school orchestra, or the conductor of the high school orchestra, Steve McNeil, is who taught me to read music, and that was cool. So I learned all that stuff in those years, and then after that, I just went and played gigs.
Right, right.
I was gigging kind of full time when I was 15.
Wow.
You know, like I bought my first car with money I made on my own gigs.
Yeah,
I never had any allowance or anything. And so when I got out of high school, I was like, I'm already working.
This is my calling.
Why would I go to school to learn how to do what I'm already doing?
Yeah. Absolutely. Know?
So
school of life.
Yeah. So I just kept doing it, you know, and then slowly wound up out here. But as far as focusing on the upright bass,
yeah,
I think, I mean, a lot of it was like a couple different records. You know, there was like, well, the series of records that Miles Davis did, the Paul Chambers were on, like Relaxin' and, you know, I can't remember all those names, you know, all that kind of, that were all done in like a few days, and just Paul Chambers just sounds so beautiful. And then The Shape of Jazz to Come by Ornette Coleman. And those records just made me, that was the main record.
And Ron Carter, it's right before the quartet.
It's right before Ron Carter. It's like the last step, I think, with Paul Chambers. And then Shape of Jazz to Come with Charlie Hayden at his... He was a young man and so deep. He didn't sound young at all in that. I mean, he has all this fire, but he has all this depth in his playing. And so that made me really gravitate towards
him. A lot of expression.
Yeah. Yeah, like he's a guy who's not too concerned with technique, I don't think.
No.
You know, he's...
No, I really like it. He's an emotional player.
Yeah.
And it adds a lot of color.
Mm-hmm.
And not so worried about stereotypes.
Yeah. Well, even like the thing about playing notes in tune and stuff, Charlie Hayden plays more like a singer. Where like some notes are flat on purpose.
Yeah.
Because you want that note to be sad.
Yeah.
Or you want it to mean something, you know, it just sounds right, you know. So he'll just, and you know that he can slide up into it if he wants to, but he doesn't. He holds it there. You know, which is like what, you know, Billie Holiday or Elliott Smith would do or any singer.
You know.
On
he's
top
that
of
one game. With Ornette, Soap Suds.
Yeah.
It's just a duet.
That's amazing.
You can really hear him.
Yeah, you can really hear him.
Competition.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, so there's
a song called Mary Hart.
Is it really? I don't remember that. Mary Hart.
That's a 70s.
That is totally 70s.
Wow.
70s flash, right? How'd you meet Nels Klein?
I met Nels Klein through Scott Amendola, that plays drums with Nels Klein singers, and they used to play together with a couple of different people. I think they just, on one-offs and everything, they would meet each other. Scott, I was living in San Francisco, and so was Scott, or in the area up there. And he and I met just playing some local jazz gigs, and then he knew Nels, and I was a fan of Nels. I discovered Nels, actually, through Ball Hog and Tugboat, through your record.
Oh, wow.
And then... You know, I was always, like we've talked about this a little bit before, I was always really interested, you know, I was playing jazz, but all my friends were punks.
Right.
And so I was always interested, you know, when Black Flag did
Process of Down.
So that's just super huge to me. And so finding, you know, hearing on Ball Hog and figuring out that Nels was a person who was doing in his own way something similar.
Yeah.
You know, with this kind of certain edge to free jazz that comes more out of rock and out of punk rock.
So Nels is putting together this band, Singers, and he asked Scott who should be on bass?
Yeah, and me and Scott had already talked about how I was a fan of Nels, and
okay.
Scott and I had a lot of fun playing together, and he said, you know, I think
and
I know
the
guy.
How long now? 5-6 years?
I think it's like 8 years now.
8 years.
Yeah.
I know several records.
Yeah, there's been three records with that band, and then Scott and I also played on the Andrew Hill tribute record that had also Mr. Bobby Bradford and Ben Goldberg and Andrea Parkins on it. And then we also are we just recorded recently this large group thing that we all played on for that Ed Ruscha,
right,
accompanying the Ed Ruscha art pieces, which I don't know how that's ever going to come out, but that's some crazy stuff.
So how would you, somebody asked you, what's it like playing with Nels Klein, what would you tell him?
It's a great adventure. Like, great in the sense of, like, a really, really fun and rewarding. I think, I was actually talking to somebody about this recently, that of almost every musician I've played with, he's not the only one, but he's one of the few that, he's, in my experience playing with him and playing in a lot of different situations, and he's always ready to throw down, you know? He can be sick, the sound in the club can suck, the music can be underprepared because we haven't had enough time to rehearse, or there's some weird stuff, we're both lumped in together on some side project or something.
Yeah.
And he just always plays for real.
Yeah.
You know, he never phones it in. I've never once heard him phone it in.
Yeah.
And that's just that alone is inspiring.
Yeah, big time.
You know, and, you know, it's so easy. Somebody plays with as many different projects as he does and plays as much as he does. Sometimes people get, you know, emotionally, it's hard to always conjure that up.
Yeah, when he does it, you do an album with him, does he bring you, how does he bring the tunes to you?
He does, in a kind of a combination of ways. Usually we'll just, he'll just start bringing in a few tunes every now and then when we're playing shows, and we'll do a little, but that band rehearses very, very rarely.
I know.
Yeah, so we'll just kind of...
You guys are up in the bay, and he's down here. And
yeah, and nobody's schedules work out, and so we just kind of learn stuff as we go on the bandstand and do a few rehearsals, but he's the kind of guy that if on his records, if we get through a take without falling on our asses, that's usually the take that's going to go on the record. It's like, okay, we're done, moving on. And I'm like, what? You know, some of that shit's really hard. And I'm like, I'm just figuring out these changes. And he's like, no, that was it. There's literally a tune on the second record, The Giant Pen, which is, incidentally, I think my favorite record I've done with Nels. That one was just sounds special to me when I hear it. And there's a tune on there called Bright Moon, where there's this long bass solo over these really hard kind of oblique guitar chords he's playing. And we were practicing. I thought we were doing a rehearsal in the studio. I thought we were doing like a run through, and I was just playing through it, just practicing, you know, how I can get from point A to point B through these chord changes. Yeah, and then we finish it, and he's like, "Great!" And he takes off his guitar and walks into the show. I was mortified, man. I learned to live with it, but I was arguing, you know. At the time, I was like, "No, I didn't know it." He's like, "No, it sounded fine. Moving on." And it's not even a time crunch thing, because all four of those records we did with him, they've all finished like a day early. We're always just out of the studio when there's still studio time booked. So it's not a rush thing. It's just a vibe thing for him.
Yeah.
He wants the stuff to sound fresh. And
actually, the first take is the best.
Yeah,
kind of.
As long as you get through it, I know. See, sometimes I go back and I hear those records and I can see Nels' point of the magic of the energy of that freshness, but I also wince at my own mistakes a lot.
You
know?
It's always going to be there.
Yeah, you know that it's always going to be there.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I think like...
Let it go, man.
Yeah, exactly.
I know what it's like, the regret, the recrimination.
Yeah, you know what I think of sometimes, because I always remember this one part on... I think it's on War Pigs. Where I swear the band gets off by like two beats, and Bill Ward's like diddly diddly bit, and then they're like diddly diddly bit, and then they come next time they never play it that way again. So I think it's a mistake, because every other time they're together and it's fucking War Pigs.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like
right.
You know, it's like it's yeah. one of the most important songs in history of rock and roll. So I'm like, you know, if they can live with that, I can live with my out of tune clubs or my wrong notes in there.
A little bit of sour ass.
And now Bill Ward's gonna hear this and get pissed off.
I think he lives in Orange County.
Did he? He's gonna. Yeah. Uh-oh. Maybe he meant to do it. I wouldn't disrespect Bill Ward at all.
No, I really like that drum in the early days.
I love some of my favorite rock drums.
They really let him play wild in the beginning.
Yeah, and it's got such a nice loose feel to it.
Yeah, it's the second album especially.
Yeah.
I think it's 8-track too.
Is it? Wow. I heard a thing that supposedly they paid for their first record themselves.
Maybe.
Which I don't know. It doesn't seem like
they had
that.
A big manager.
No, okay.
Jay Anthony.
That might be a myth.
Right.
Yeah.
Who ended up ripping it off or something.
Yeah. What bass players are you listening to these days? Can I ask you? As long as we're geeking out on bass talk.
Yeah. I try to listen to everybody. It seems everybody's got... The bass is so... still in its own making, that everybody's got their own take on it, and I got something to learn from.
Yeah.
I'm checking it out. You know, the big guy in my... that I always go back to and I'm listening to again is James Jamerson.
Yeah.
Out on those Motown records.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And also I've been listening a lot to those cats on the James Brown records.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah.
Something about that kind of playing. That was funky playing with fingers.
Uh huh.
And yeah. Before slapping.
Yeah.
That's really interested me.
Yeah. And it's like, it's all about like where the notes go, right?
But, yeah, which is what I find with young bass players in punk bands. They don't have sophistication, so they come up with these bass lines that I really get into.
Uh huh.
Because they can't really wow it up with technique, and
uh-huh.
Some of the lines are really trippy.
Yeah.
So I give everybody a shot when I'm watching them. I identify with the bass player. God, what would I do here?
Uh-huh.
And look what they're doing. Wow, isn't that a trip?
I do that too. I'm still like in love with it. Like not the instrument, but like the role of it. You know, like what's.
And even like I was asked to do this essay on Thurston's first solo album.
Mm.
And so I thought, man, I'm just going to talk about this in terms of bass. And he probably played the bass on it all, you know.
Which record is that?
It's called Psychic Hearts.
Yeah, that's a great record with, yeah. Oh, man, it has
the
Yoko
bass.
Ono Soul on it.
So right.
That's a great record.
And there's a big wail out at the end, but the mm-hmm. first 10 songs are these little things. And the bass is, there's no fills.
Yeah.
There's no fills. If there's time for a fill in the rhythm section, he lets Steve Shelley do it.
Uh-huh.
In fact, him with Steve Shelley, and then him just being there, it's a lot like Sonic Youth.
Yeah.
But without Lee, without Camp.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this other dynamic. And him playing bass against his own music, it's kind of, it was trippy. It just made me, when I was listening to it and trying to write up in terms of that, I was thinking, what would I play here?
Yeah.
What would I do here? So that's the way bass players always, they empower me.
Uh-huh.
I come from such an insecure place. The bass in the old days was always looked upon as really subordinate in the old days.
Right.
There was a big hierarchy in the old rock and roll. Yeah, I didn't know that Geezer Butler wrote all the words and a lot of the music.
Yeah, that was like Shahzad Ismaili. He talks about that there's a bass player persecution complex a little bit.
Yeah.
You know,
I think
like,
I come out of that big time.
I do too.
In the 70s.
Yeah, you probably do punk, more than me because...
Yeah, I think with punk it evened it out more.
Well, I have to say you personally broke a lot of ground for me that people were like, oh, Mike Watt's cool. And I was like 18 trying to play the bass and my skater friend thought it was all right.
Oh,
you
wow.
You know what I mean?
That was, yeah, it was really right field where you put your retarded friend kind of...
It might still be. Maybe that's what my dad was thinking when he steered me that direction. Put the dumb kid on the bass.
Right, like, or the guitar player, you know, there's so many guitar players. You want a gig? Go to bass.
Yeah.
There's plenty of those spots open.
You know, my dad just bought his first bass and is now gigging playing bass back in Colorado.
Wow. You know, I hear a lot of guitarists get on bass and say it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you lift their hands, kind of make the adjustment.
Well, it's fun that, like, there's been so much expectation and cliche put on the guitar. On the bass, it's almost very liberating for them.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, look at all these things you can do with this. And I always thought it was, like, I've had people tell me in bands, frontman or guitarist, bass is just a sound. And in a way, I think it's what they're saying is good, because I think bass players can get too concerned with just them operating their machine and not how it fits into the whole sound.
Yeah, I agree.
Because bass does have a huge responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, some bands try to play without a bass. What's that about?
Like Slater. They did a good job of it.
They did a good job. But it's so, that kick drum, so lonely.
I was just going to say, Janet kind of, she plays bass with her foot.
Yeah.
On those records.
So lonely.
Oh, and then they'll put, and then they'll turn down like to D or something.
Yeah,
on
right.
The guitar.
Right. Trying to get it there, but the guitar, even with the looser strings, you don't get the punch.
Yeah.
Which is another thing these days, that young bass players use in effects. And you can lose a lot of that punch.
Yeah.
You know? But all their buddies got effects.
Yeah, and the guitar player's got a million.
Yeah, they got all their little pedals and stuff, so they probably don't feel left out. And I tried it with my second opera, some effects. I had Pete play low notes on the left hand of the organ. But to me, it's, I just like bass, I think. Kind of let those people do. I mean, there's so much more to work. I haven't even really explored five string that much. There's just so much to learn on the four string.
Yeah, I don't even know if there's a need sometimes, because the four string has, like, if Jamie Jamerson and Paul Chambers could do what they could do.
Oh yeah.
Why do I need
Mingus.
More? Why do I need?
Mingus was really against the electric bass.
Yeah.
That's one of those.
He was. He was.
Oh, incredibly.
Hmm.
Like, I guess the Nat King Cole trio, that bass guy, put his string bass to an amp. In this spiel I was reading on Mingus, he talked about that. Oh, that's already been tried, you know.
That's
like, that to him was the electric bass was like
putting
this cat. And so maybe he's a little narrow-minded there. I think Jamerson especially, he, who was an upright player, who went to the bass guitar, and then completely defined, well, not completely defined, because that gives everybody else no room to do anything on. But we just owe him a lot, because he really,
him and
whether it was an accident or whatever, he hit on it, man.
Yeah, him and Carole Kay both, like, so much.
Her too, yeah.
I mean, so much of what we think of just comes from that, right?
Yeah, she's incredible. She's on all that TV music.
Yeah, and the Beach Boys records and stuff like
A lot of album sessions.
Yeah. Stuff just, and it sounds great. You're like, it's just the sound of it. Like you're saying, where the sound fits in the mix.
Her composition is incredible. I think she played with pick most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for the TV, the little speakers and
Like flatline strings.
Right, and I think even foam rubber up from the body, mute on the strings. Stuff like this to get definition and whatever it took.
Yeah,
I like that idea too. I think that's why I said it was good. Sometimes for those guys to think of it as just a sound, because I think bass players get too into this micromanaging stuff that what does it matter in the real world? Like, there's big, I have young players always asking me about fingers versus pick. Like, it's a huge dilemma.
Right.
No dilemma.
It's like whatever
it takes.
Whatever it takes, yeah.
You know? Probably be best to be good at both.
Yeah.
I seen that once over, where you do both in the same tune.
Yeah. Different parts are different.
Yeah. Amazing.
Geezer just picks it up for the end of Iron Man.
That's right. He's a great bass player.
Yeah.
He had a big effect on my bass playing, Geezer Butler.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
English guys, Jack Bruce, John Entwistle, Geezer Butler.
Yeah.
Black U.S. guys, James Jamerson, Larry Graham.
Yeah.
You know, big effect on my bass playing.
And all those bass players play play melodically, but within... But within the bass part. you know, which like you do, you know, you always.
Well, thank you.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think about.
I try.
Yeah, I mean, I think about some of those. Nelson and I were talking about this recently, actually. Just some of your playing on like. On those like those early Firehose records where it's just very very melody based. You know, the bass playing, but they don't get in the way of the vocal melodies. They're just counter melodies.
You know, the way he played his guitar.
Yeah.
He was using political thought.
Yeah.
I think Nels talks about this in the with Jamie Conno documentary.
Yeah.
Where he wanted to redefine guitar because he wanted to put ideas in the band of organizing and get rid of this hierarchy.
Yeah.
So he played with a lot of muting and chicken picking to give me room. And I think that had a big effect on me, the composition.
Yeah.
Where you have to think about where things are going to end up at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you don't want to be Bogarten.
Yeah.
Maybe in reggae.
Yeah, that's where it's one place the bass player can just go off.
Family man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But not too crazy.
But a lot of other music, you got to be really conscious of the physics.
Yeah.
And aiding and abetting. But I think people are looking at an ensemble to become a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So why not get the instruments, besides the persecution conference, why not get engaged in a conversation with the other? And that doesn't mean just fighting with the guitar. That means bringing up the drummer with you, too.
Sure, yeah.
The drums are incredible. But to me, we're almost all doing drums. Yeah. They're the most honest about it. But we're all playing these little rhythms.
Oh, yeah.
And if you do have a lot of notes, you end up in some kind of cycles.
Wow, that's interesting.
Motifs.
Which is where a lot of those are the first instruments.
If you're right-handed and you're plucking with the right hand,
yeah,
that's doing a drum thing.
Yeah.
In a way. Well, the guitar used to be stuck in the rhythm section, too. And so was the piano.
Yeah.
Right.
In the old bands.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's like, I mean, it's instinct. It's our heartbeat. The first.
Yeah.
It's a rhythm. It's in our blood.
Yeah. But the physics of the notes, we're in a narrow place on the bass. It's a very small thing. But because if you expand it, you're actually getting in the way of these other guys. The mid-range guys, the guitars,
right,
the sax, the trumpet, the singer, the violin. So yeah. It's...
But you still got to be doing something down there to keep.
That's right.
Keep
that's right.
Bubbling,
big
you know?
Time. I mean, Bach, there's bass on that organ and all his pieces, and that goes. That's a 500-year tradition.
Yeah.
So it's actually not that new.
A friend of mine was that I used to study with a little bit was talking about. Saw some master class of Charlie Hayden talking, and somebody raised their hand. Said, "Mr. Hayden, who's your favorite bass player?" He's like, "Bach, of course."
The counterpoint.
You know, it's just like...
That's just all counterpoint.
Yeah. He's like, that's what he, you know, he kind of basically was saying that's where he thought so much of what jazz is playing was coming from. Maybe.
And I think he was, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
You know, that and, like, church choir is like a combination of these things, you know? The bass in the church choir and also the left hand and, like, Bach fugues and stuff.
Right, right. And foot pedals.
Yeah, right. I always forget about those.
Yeah, do these three piece things, the singing and violin and the foot. Play all the keyboards. Same guy, yeah, incredible.
Wow.
He finds the third.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the third interval was up for grabs for a long time. They didn't exactly know. And he used some of Newton's calculus.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Because he thought it was a way of reaching God with music, yeah.
Right.
So in that, there must be a link and... It's interesting.
In a way, there is with the physics, right? Like,
yeah.
Like I know if I, you know, on especially on like a upright or some instrument that doesn't have frets. I mean, you can do it just harmonics too on a fret instrument, but you start playing this overtones. You start sliding your finger and you find a harmonic and you find another one. And the first thing you get is a major triad.
Big time.
But then the fourth thing you get, and this is really geeking out, but you get a dominant seventh. You don't get a major seventh. You get a dominant seventh, which is the sound of the blues.
Yeah.
You know, so you basically get the chord that the blues is based on, which is considered in classical music an unstable chord, you know, in like Western classical music.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why they're afraid of the potential of these things to resolve in the wrong direction.
Well, the Sabbath guys are using the sharp fourth. Yeah.
Yeah. On purpose.
Bluesy, yeah.
And it's a bluesy
thing, too. Too.
Yeah.
Use it Funhouse.
Yeah, right?
I like it.
Funhouse is cool how it alludes to it, too, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and basically they were thinking, what they told me, James Brown.
Really? Yeah.
It's trippy about that when I asked them stuff like that, because they listen to so much music. That bass line in Little Doll, Pharoah Sanders, Upper Egypt, Lower Egypt.
Really?
Shake Appeal. He told me that's him, his take on Little Richard.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it makes sense, that's why the Stooges is so deep.
And why the music didn't go out of fashion, I think it was made of. I also think we embraced it big time without realizing it. Even though they weren't a popular band, the music embraced them. And why Grand Funk record sounds really dated, but a Stooges record doesn't.
Yeah. Which is a trip how that happened.
Yeah, because they were in the moment, they didn't know.
Yeah, and you don't know what's going to, when the slough clears off.
Right.
Who's going to be remembered.
Right.
You know, it's hard to tell when you're in the middle of...
Especially in the moment, they were eating a lot of shit, and a lot of people hated them.
Yeah.
A lot of people hated them. When I was a teenager, I remember telling people about talking about the peer pressure thing, and it was like, what?
They were not
like them fags.
Oh, really?
Well, the whole glitter music was like that.
Yeah,
Roxy or Mott the Hoople, even Bowie at first.
Wow.
Until the girlfriends liked it. It was okay.
Bowie probably broke down a lot of doors like that.
Yeah, and he was basically kind of copying Syd Barrett.
Wow.
Lou Reed, Iggy Pop. I mean, he would tell you that probably. Anthony Newley. That's what he sings like. Right? Okay, let's just some more music.
We'll be right back.
from Pedro Show. That was Laura Keats by Truman Peyote. And we're coming to the end of the third hour of the June 29th, 2008 Watt from Pedro Show. Gavin, thank you so much for coming by and talk some bass with me. It was a hell ride. That's why I came in on the end there.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're getting to know that freeway, right?
It's my friend. Most of the time. Yeah.
Right. And you're going to play some gigs?
No, actually, I'm down here to do some other stuff. I'm helping some comrades at a book conference up here.
Ah, oh, righteous. So,
yeah. Up in Anaheim.
That was associated with an Erica's book publishing thing.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so I'm just helping them.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you give me some of their stuff that's happening.
Yeah, they do good work. And then I'm just going to... What's
the website?
AKPress.org.
Yeah.
And the other one...
AKPRESS.org.
And the other good one is the Kate Sharpley Library.
Yeah, Kate Sharpley Library.
Yeah, .net, which is...
.net.
Yeah. The plugs. Yeah, but thanks for having me.
Okay, I like it.
It's fun to come down, though, and not even have my bass in the car, I have to say.
Well, probably more room.
Yeah, it just feels different. It feels like when you go out without your backpack on or something. It just
or
feels
clothes.
Lighter. Or clothes. You feel lighter and naked. It's good and bad at the same time.
The horror.
The camera.
Talia,
yes?
Thank you for bringing your buddies, Kendall and Brenna and Alyssa.
Alyssa.
You didn't get to say a lot. Sorry.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's great to listen.
Sean, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Came late. You didn't get to talk a lot.
I didn't today. It's all
right. Well, we had to make room for...
I appreciate the invite.
Peaks.
Rants.
Yeah.
We want to thank you for the rant. And then the rant that was never to be, it ended up amusing.
Amusing.
Not amusing. Amusing, like a wondering?
Yeah.
What do you call that?
Pondering.
A pondering.
Yeah, I have a lot of this.
So you only ended up with one rat, and you said you had a buttload of them.
There'll be more.
She had a list.
Yeah, I had a list. Fuck the list, huh?
Yeah, just for your sake, yeah.
No, she had sent me an email. I'm coming down there with,
an agenda.
But when it came time to do, we got one rat. Basically, the rant was, whatever.
Humans.
I'm glad you brought it on, though. We're all stronger for it. We're all better people. And Brother Matt, of course, you're always essential, aiding and abetting.
Congrats.
Happy early birthday.
Now, I'm going to go to Europe Wednesday. And I'll be back Monday. It's a little short one, two gigs. So, I think we shoot for July 9 to do next show.
Cool.
Bring Todd Congelier from Recess Records. He's got a whole new batch. Cat from Torrance who moved to Pedro, a pro skater, to start a punk label.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, he's a great cat.
Recess Records, cool.
So that'll be the next show, people. And I think after that, I'll do a remote one from either Bordeaux or Amsterdam.
Cool.
Mm. And then I'll come back and we'll be at the Pleasure Point.
The Outlaw Smoking.
Once more.
In Amsterdam.
Is it?
Yeah, the
indoor
smoking.
Yeah, it's all over Europe like that.
Yeah.
It's okay. You know.
Is it cigarettes?
All smokes.
What?
Yeah, so you don't force it. But let me end the show here.
No.
Rant.
Don't end it.
Rant.
I just got started. Come on.
Okay, keep your powder dry.
Yeah.